Okay, calling to order the AMAT Policy Committee meeting for this Thursday, December 15, 2022. Let's see if we have our quorum.
We do.
Okay, that was the important thing today, is to get a quorum, so here. Any audience participation?
There is none today.
Okay. That moves us to item two, which is the minutes from the September 22, 2022 meeting. Has everybody had a chance to review, and if so, would you make a motion?
So moved to approve those minutes.
Anderson and Donsey. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed or abstaining? Okay. Item three, staff reports. We're going to start with the financial progress report. Director Baker.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 3A, you'll see our financial progress report through October of 2022. It's been about 20% of the budget, and we are in good financial shape for fiscal year 2023. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
If there are no questions, maybe we can have a motion.
So moved, Gossi.
Second, Marazzi.
Motion and second to adopt the financial progress report. Any discussion before we do a roll call? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstaining? Okay, hearing none, it passes unanimously. Okay, next on staff reports is the technical progress report. Curtis Baker once again.
All right, thank you again. So just a couple of things really briefly. One, like AMATS did provide ODOT with a letter of support for they are applying for a statewide grant called, it's not Reconnecting Communities, it's something communities. So there's some kind of, it's with a T, Thriving Communities, that's what it is, sorry. And that's where they're looking for funds to hire a consultant to help communities build capacity when it comes to transportation planning. If they are selected for that grant, they could select one of our local communities for some of that capacity building. AMATS would support that. That's part of one of the latest federal grants that has come out that's we've seen. It's kind of quiet right now for other federal grants. We're sort of getting close to being through that first year of cycle from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Internally, Matt's going to talk a lot about the Safe Streets for All and some safety stuff, but also want to let you know we did have our first meeting of our EV, Electronic Vehicle Infrastructure Task Force. We had a good participation with a lot of members, got a lot of interesting information. We are putting together an EV infrastructure charging plan that's going to look at some of the positive locations that we could put them, but also going to look at the policies a little bit and also kind of, I think, shed some light on what communities have to be considering, because we definitely got a lot of feedback that these things end up being a little bit more of a pain in the butt than just as simple as just installing them and then walking away. So we're trying to do collecting data and put that in and develop a plan for that too. But otherwise, appreciate everyone being here for the meeting before the holidays. And with that, I will answer any questions.
The transportation, what type of projects would they consider?
Thriving Communities thing?
Yeah.
So it's not even projects. It's more about building capacity for communities. So I think for communities that don't, say, have a city engineer or, you know, aren't clear how to navigate the process, I think it's something that would be more aligned with, like, ODOT's LTAP, like, training process where they would offer that to communities. So it's not, like, one of the big dollar amount, you know, gonna build a bridge with it kind of thing.
Just to add on, I got an email this morning that the Ray's second round NOFO came out today.
Wow.
It's due in February.
Okay. So they've sped that timeline up from last year.
Yes.
So thank you, Jim. That's helpful. And as everyone are familiar with, the RAISE grant's one of the large, big infrastructure federal grants from, it existed before the bipartisan infrastructure law, but it's now called RAISE, and it's a minimum of $5 million projects. And meant to be transformational type grants. So they do take a lot of work to apply for, and the hit rate is very low. But that they do exist, and they are a possibility for some larger projects.
Okay, anything else for the director? Okay, that brings us to item C, AMAS federal funds report. Dave Poulet.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Task number 3C is federal funds report. Our current balances in our funding categories, we're a little bit over. With STBG, we're about 402,000 over, but that's good. We actually want to keep it that way. With CMAC, we're actually, we have a balance of about 1.5 million. And TASA, we have a balance of nearly 500,000. Since our last meeting in September, a couple significant jobs have sold. State Route 43 widening in Streetsboro. We had STBG and CMAC funding in that project. Riverview Road et al. Is a large resurfacing project, mainly on streets in the valley. It's an Akron project, funded with $700,000 of STBG funds. And just last week, another large project that's been in the pipeline for a long time, East Exchange Street, Complete Streets, which is over by the university on the south side of the university, sold. It's a it's over $10 million project. We have 3.8 million of STBG in. And other than that, a couple of things I want to mention. Statewide, there's approximately $46 million of STBG available from all the balances of the MPOs collectively. And AMATS is going to try to use some of that as much as we can. We're going to move some projects up, and we'll discuss that more later when we discuss an amendment. We still are working on how to spend the carbon reduction program funding. It's approximately $2.5 million in fiscal year 23, and then it'll be $1.5 million each year after that. And last but not least, I want one more plug for the ODOT website that shows the all the grant programs that's available from the new bill, BIL, transportation discretionary funding. It really helps you try to understand what the money is supposed to be used for, and it also shows which deadlines are approaching. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Poulet. Takes us to item four, old business. Anything
we have none?
We have none. So under five, new business, item A is Safe Streets for All process update. This is attachment 5A, Matt Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hello, everybody. So just as Dave spoke about some of these discretionary programs that are part of the BIL, Safe Streets for All is a really good example. It's one of the I'd say one of the programs that a lot of MPOs across the country are pretty excited about. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about where we are with our process. And attachment 5A goes into some of the details of the progress report, what our staff has been doing over the last few months. But today I'm just gonna do a quick recap of why we're doing this in case anybody forgets. It is one of the larger discretionary sources under the BIL. Provides $1 billion per year, but it's kind of a big mystery. We don't know yet how the feds are going to dole out this funding. The last I've heard, the round one funding is going to be awarded in early 2023, so we'll certainly be eager to see how, you know, which projects are successful and what the take rate is. You know, Curtis spoke about the lower take rate with RAISE programs. Don't really know yet how it's going to shake out, but AMATS decided to do a Safe Streets for All action plan internally so that we'd be able to hit the ground running for this spring, late this spring and into the summer, And communities could then apply for all sorts of different projects or to address different strategies, and I'll get into that in a second. So it's just a lot of things are different. This is another safety source that we hopefully can take advantage of. And I would say even if, you know, if for some reason we aren't successful in being awarded Safe Streets for All funding, I really hope that this process will help move the needle on some of the things, making our system safer and leading to other funding successes. So, not to go into the details, but like we held 6 focus groups earlier this month, or last month rather. And part of that is because we're really trying to get a lot of broad input, going beyond just what the crash data tells us and trying to understand the variety of different stakeholders' opinions and what their users or the people involved with those agencies are telling them. So we had those. That was pretty successful. One thing I did want to highlight, though, and I'll ask for your help on this, we're in the midst of having our online survey. It runs through January 6th. So far, as of this morning, we had 133 responses, but they are from 40 different zip codes, which I was pretty happy about that. And we have 45 map responses so far. So I'd really like to get those numbers up quite a bit. There's information on your packets on, you know, where you can find the link and promoting the survey. I would say if you need anything we can do to help you, promote this, I'm happy to do so. Please reach out. And then data analysis is pretty much, you know, on the tail end of that. Dave and a couple other people on staff have been really going to town with that, trying to understand what exists, what the crashes are, why they're occurring, getting into all sorts of analyses. And one of the things you need to do through Safe Streets for All is establish a high crash network, which is just the example map shown here is what that did based on criteria of number of crashes, crashes per mile. So then there's the million-dollar question that we're starting to pivot to. The fun part is, what do we do about it? So there are all sorts of, one of the nice things about Safe Streets for All is there are a lot of different directions you can run with it. While there may be big projects that come out of this and could be eligible for Safe Streets for All funds, there are also things that might, there might be changes to our policies on how we score and rank projects based on looking at safety in different ways. So we're trying to start talking about what all of this information we're in the process of collecting means. And then the question is, what do we do about it? So one of the areas of, this is just a small list of many things that this funding can be used for, but one of the things that seems to be coming up in a lot of our internal conversations is systemic approaches. So an example of like applying low-cost safety treatment might be if you have areas where you have a high number of weather-related crashes in rain and snow, applying a high-friction surface treatment on these corridors. And then minimizing common risks. An example would be like looking at existing transit routes and people's access to those routes, improving things like lighting. Even lighting can be used as that's eligible for this funding. And then there will be bigger projects, or there could be bigger projects too. An example of that would be transforming a large roadway where you have speed issues and stuff into more of a complete streets corridor. But we can even go into like closing our trail and sidewalk gaps or educational campaigns, all sorts of different things. And like I said, that's just a small sampling of what the funding can be used for. So we'll really be drilling down along with our task force, which some of you are members of, and trying to decide like what directions we want to go with this and what kind of things we want to recommend. So that's really in a nutshell where we are right now. But it is a pretty big effort among our staff. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Under 5B is traffic crashes and safety performance measures, 2019 through 21 report. This will be presented by Dave Goulet.
We're sharing this presentation. Amy Prater will do the first part, and then I'll do the second part.
Gonna keep it spicy. So we've completed our 2019-2021 crash report. As traffic volumes have slowly started to inch back up, so have crashes and injuries. Unfortunately, fatalities have really, really risen during the pandemic, and those numbers are still up this past year, I should say. Bicycle and pedestrian crashes have basically followed the same pattern as traffic volumes. As traffic volumes have come back, so have bicycle and pedestrian crashes. There was definitely a decrease in 2020, and we will look more at the trends of this report. So, 1,000 daily vehicle miles traveled is up 90% from 2021, but we still are under pre-pandemic levels. Total crashes increased by 1,022, which is about 6% since 2021. Serious crashes, we look at serious crashes now, and so a crash is like one event, but then we also look at number of actual injuries. Like, you may have multiple people in a vehicle that were injured. So serious crashes decreased by 5, but serious injuries increased by 23. So we had less crashes, but more injuries. Fatalities basically stayed the same between the 2 years. This is, you can see the fatalities during the pandemic, and then again the last year. It definitely jumped way back up. This is actually a national trend, not just a statewide trend, that the pandemic, it really, really, there was a lot more fatalities. So our crashes were analyzed. What we did is we took the data from ODOT and plotted it in GIS, and then I went through and checked pretty much every crash. Some of the crashes were plotted incorrectly. They were just completely in the wrong location. Some reasons for this is sometimes state routes intersect at different locations. The same state route numbers intersect multiple times, and they're placed at the wrong location. Sometimes at freeway interchanges, all the crashes are placed in the very center of the interchange. When in reality, some occurred on the main line, some occurred on the ramps, some occurred at the intersections with the ramps on the arterial roadway. So all of those were moved so that our analysis was more productive for everyone. And then once all the crashes were moved, they were labeled as either intersection or segment. Actually, they were checked at the same time. But typically, crashes within 250 feet of an intersection are considered an intersection crash. But when we looked at those, any crashes that occurred in a driveway were considered a segment crash. Any crash departing an intersection was considered a segment crash. So there was other circumstances that we looked at for those crashes. For high crash criteria, for roadway segments, we looked at a minimum of 3 crashes per mile per year, and a minimum of 30% of those crashes had to be injury or fatality, which is a change from 2 years ago. Last year, we changed the methodology. We used to just focus on total crashes, and now, due to the state changing the way that their safety program is working, we're focusing on injuries and fatalities, because that is really the most important thing. Nobody likes a crash. But, you know, if people are safe and just their cars are damaged, that is not the top priority. So, intersections, 9 crashes in a 3-year period was the minimum, with the same 30% crashes with injury and fatality. new criteria, like I say, no longer takes into account crash rate whatsoever. We just focus on severity. So a composite score is calculated for every location based on the number of crashes and the percentage of fatalities and injuries. For example, if a location ranked 22 in number of crashes and 11 in percentage of injury and fatality crashes, then the total score would be 33. So the locations with the lowest composite scores are the worst locations. So for crash segments, we had 143 roadway sections that met the minimum criteria. The highway crash sections are located in Table 1 of your crash map. And two sections actually tied for first place for worst segment. The first one is State Route 59 from Alpha to State Route 261 in Portage County. And the other location is 241 Maslin Road from Conroy to the South Point Road of Akron. There were 231 intersections that met our minimum criteria. The intersections are listed in Table 2 of your report. The number one crash location this year is actually State Route 18 and Medina Line Road in Bath County Townships, and it also borders on Medina County. Freeways were not done by us specifically. ODOT does freeway segments, and we use their analysis. They analyze in tenth of a mile sections, and there's no real beginning and end point. Typically, when we create a segment, we go from this road to that road, or this road to this cork line, or things with like a defined termini. The state literally starts at the end and goes a tenth of a mile all the way through along the middle.
The ghost of Christmas.
That was a test, Amy.
Evidently, it's like, get up, get up.
You want to spice it up?
And I'm so close. And then ODOT only considers the top 50 rural and urban statewide to be like high crash locations. So those are the only ones that they focus on. So, and now I will turn it over to Dave. Now that you've
hey, thank you. That never happened before. The second part of our presentation will be about bicycle and pedestrian crashes. Here in recent years, there's been a lot more focus on these type of crashes. And as Amy alluded to, bicycle and pedestrian crashes pretty much follow the same trend as vehicular crashes. They inched up a little bit in 2021. Monthly bicycle crashes happen mostly in the summer, which kind of makes sense because that's it's kind of tough to you can ride a bicycle in the winter, but it's kind of tough. So we did have something unusual, though, happen in 21. For some odd reason, we had a spike in September. This graph is usually a pretty well-defined, like, bell-shaped graph, but it happened in 21. We had a little spike in September, so not really sure what happened there, but that was a little bit unusual. We'll have to see what happens in the coming years. Bicycle crash ages, the ages of people involved in these crashes, 15 and under by far had the highest percentage of people involved in bicycle crashes. And then it kind of levels out throughout the rest of the eight groups. Pedestrian crashes followed the same trend as bicycle crashes. They inched up a little bit. We had one less pedestrian fatality. We usually have a few more pedestrian crashes than bicycle crashes, because when you stop and think about it, I'll give myself as an example. Like, I might ride my bike, you know, a few times a year. Well, maybe more than that, but I definitely don't ride my bike daily. But I am a pedestrian daily. Like, every day I park in my parking lot and I walk down the sidewalk, across the street to get to my office. So statistically, there's just a lot more pedestrians in the mix. Pedestrian crash trends stay pretty much the same as they always have. For some reason, we have that spike in October. As long as I've been doing this, we've always had that. We've always had this happen in October. I can't drill down enough to get to actually find a real reason for this, other than many of these crashes happen when it's dark. And October, at least recently, October has had really nice weather. We've had some really nice weather in October yet, and the days are shorter. And I know going in driving to work in the morning, it's dark. It gets dark earlier in the evening. And I truly think that seeing pedestrians is tough sometimes. This graph shows the time of day they happen. There's a little spike in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. That's probably people walking to work, people walking to kids walking to school, to the bus stop. And then after 2, I call this the after school hours. I think after school, after work hours, you have a lot more people out being active. The ages follow kind of the same trend. You have a lot of these crashes happening with pedestrians that are under the age of 15. You have a little spike in the 20 to 24 age range, perhaps college students, I'm not sure. But and then it kind of levels out through the rest of the age groups. Maybe just a few, it goes up slightly as you age, and that could be because perhaps for the same reason like vehicular accidents go up. Sometimes as you age, and believe me, I know this firsthand, your vision and stuff is just not as good as it used to be, especially at night. I think that darkness it really ties into these pedestrian crashes. Safety performance measures, just briefly, this is a new federal requirement for ODOT, the MPOs. We have to keep track of number of fatalities per million vehicle miles traveled, serious injuries for vehicle miles traveled, and number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. When we first started doing this, we took 5 years of data, 5 years in case there's any kind of oddity in those years, it'll balance out. So the first 5 years we looked at was 2011 through 2015. And then we've been comparing 5 years of data to that original benchmark. And unfortunately, when it comes to fatalities, we haven't been doing too well, and especially recently, we've had more fatalities, less traffic, that drives the rate up even more. So with number of fatalities and the fatalities per million vehicle miles traveled, those two statistics have gone up. Number of serious injuries and serious injuries per million vehicle miles have gone, fortunately those have gone down, and so have number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. And finally, I just briefly want to mention the ODOT safety program. ODOT has a fantastic safety program. I think it's around $150 million now per year. three programs, abbreviated, formal, and systemic. Just briefly, the abbreviated program is smaller projects, quick projects, $250,000 max. The formal application process, or the formal application program, is the one that most of you are probably interested in. These are the larger projects. It could involve funding, millions of dollars of safety funding, and these are the more complex projects. Applications for those are due August 31st and March 31st. And then finally, the systemic application process is focused on pedestrian and roadway departure crashes. And these, once again, are focused on low-cost but systemic improvements that could be applied throughout the whole system. The deadline for an application for that program is January 31st, so that's fast approaching. And last but not least, I did want to mention one thing. Since last week, I just received a notice from ODOT Central Office, a little newsletter, and we have not really looked at 2022 data very close yet, because we just finished up with the 21 data. But this little newsletter that I received did have good news that fatalities are down for 22. Actually, almost every category of crash so far has been down in 22. All the data is not in. It takes until probably March until like Central Office receives all the data. But that at least it looks like in 22 maybe we're headed in the right direction. So if you have any locations in your community that you would like, would like me or Amy to look at, or have any questions, please feel free to contact us. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. When we post this on the website, we'll have the actual report, but then we also, in addition to that, we have the locations, we'll have it sorted by community, so you don't have to go through a whole bunch of crashes to locations to find your community, and that should be up on our website probably tomorrow. Yes?
Dave, do you have the data for the pedestrian and bike traffic? I mean, you have the maps in here, but do you have a spreadsheet for that?
Yes.
Can you get that to us?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you, Amy and Dave. This does require a motion that we accept this report. So do I hear a motion?
Sheridan, motion.
Johnson.
All right, we'll go with Johnson. It's good to see you here, though.
Good to be here.
Any further discussion before we take a vote? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, unanimously supported. Okay, next we're under resolutions. We have 6A, Resolution 2022-20. Approving Amendment Number 23 to the Fiscal Year 2021 through 2024 Transportation Improvement Program to add 9 new projects and to combine 4 projects into 2 projects. This is Attachment 6A, and again, Dave Poulet.
Okay, thank you. Amendment 23 is an amendment where AMATS wants to add 9 new projects to the current TIP and then combine 2 Summit County projects and 2 Barberton projects into one. As I mentioned earlier, when I did the federal funds report, there is a lot of money out there, a lot of balances from MPOs, and we do want to try to move these projects up, and we do want to try to use as much money as we can on our projects. These are not really new projects. These are projects that have been through the application process. And we've just had them parked out in like fiscal year 26 and 27, and now we want to move them up. Three projects are being added to fiscal year 23. The first one is actually not an MS project. It's strictly a state-funded project, but we need to show it in our TIP, and that is the high-level State Route 8 bridge that goes over the Cuyahoga Valley. We also want to move up Cleveland-Maslin Road resurfacing project, and we want to add the North Main Street Bridge, which is the bridge North Main Street between Akron and Cuyahoga Falls. Six projects are being moved up to 24, fiscal year 24, Cleveland-Maslin Road sidewalks, State Route 91 Darrell Road in Stowe, the right-of-way portion, Highland and Valley View Road intersection, Ravenna, Shepherd, Broadway Road intersection in Twinsburg, and Springside Drive sidewalks. And let's see, there's one more, Schwartz Drive in Coventry Township, Schwartz Drive resurfacing. The following two projects are being combined in Northfield Center Township, Valley View Road resurfacing and the Valley View Road Old 8 Road intersection improvements. And then two projects in Barberton that are adjacent to each other, Wooster Road West reconstruction and Wooster Road West resurfacing. I just wanted to briefly show you a picture of the State Route 8 Bridge. I find this a very interesting project. The old bridge is just a single structure, and it'll be replaced with two new structures, one for northbound and one for southbound traffic. And then I just wanted to just briefly show you the two projects in Northfield Center Township being combined. The intersection and the resurfacing project are right next to each other. And in Barberton, the reconstruction and the resurfacing are adjacent to each other. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Comment that the Summit 8 Bridge is really over the Little Cotton River Valley, not the Cotton River Valley.
Oh, sorry.
The difference is about 3 miles.
Sorry.
But they are close.
They're close. Close. They get together eventually.
It's still a big gorge.
All right. Any other comments? Thank you for that one. Okay. This amendment number 23 does require a resolution. Do I hear a motion?
Paradise, so moved. Following, second.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, passes unanimously. Under item 6B, it will be resolution 2022-21 approving the fiscal year 2023 elderly and disabled program project awards for fiscal years 21 through 24. Jeff Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment awards over $600,000 to three agencies, PARDA, United Disability Services, and Family and Community Services, for the transportation of the elderly and disabled in the area. These funds will be programmed into fiscal year 2023 of the TIP. Funds were awarded by ODAP. Any other questions?
Okay, got off easy. We have a motion?
So moved.
Paul Anderson, motion. Second?
McClear.
McClear. Not McGee, McClear. Gotcha. caught you there. All right, we have a motion, a second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, passes unanimously. All right, and 6C, a resolution 2022-22, the Connecting Communities Planning Grant. This will be Heather Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. Happy holidays. Attachment 6C is the Connecting Communities Planning Grant recommendation for this sixth round of funding. Applications were made available on the MS website on September 1st with a budget of $80,000. Two applications were received by the September 30th deadline, both submitted by the Village of Lakemoor, one being the joint application with Springfield Township. The Connecting Communities Plan Grant Task Force met in October and discussed the commonalities between the two applications. The task force decided a combined study would be ideal, provided the Village of Lakemoore approved. The Village of Lakemoore was consulted and agreed to awarding the total ask of $52,000 to complete the combined effort. Therefore, AMF staff is requesting approval of the Village of Lakemoore and Springfield Township Living in Lakemoore Spartan Trail Extension Study as one $52,000 planning grant. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, seeing none, this also requires a motion.
So move the sheriff in.
All right, thank you, Bobby.
I'll second you, Bobby.
All right, motion a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. Under other business, we have anything?
No, the only thing I forgot to mention was that Carrie is sending out membership forms to all members, so if you've had any changes, turnover, retirements, let us know so we can get the right name on the list. And happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Thank you for coming.
All right. Yes, I second all that. happy holidays. We have our next regular meeting scheduled for Thursday, January 26th, here at 1:30 and Home Garden Inn. And I'll take a motion to adjourn. All right, thank you. All in favor?
All right.
Are there any opposed? Thank you. We're adjourned.